I am very much on the side of those who say that Prince Charles' correspondence should not have been published or ordered to be published by the courts. And what is more, although the Freedom of Information Act, for a variety of reasons, was in its conception and execution a bit of a dog's breakfast, Parliament was absolutely clear that there should be protection for this kind of correspondence. And two, Parliament was exceptionally clear that, if necessary, the Attorney General could be given a right of veto over the Information Commissioner's and Tribunal's decisions to publish. And one of the really worrying aspects about this case, which has not received enough attention, is that the Supreme Court, on a split decision, decided in their wisdom literally to rewrite what Parliament had decided. And there is a serious question there for justices of the Supreme Court to reflect on whether they're exceeding their power, which in my view they are.
Well, rewrite or interpret?
Well, if you read, I mean, and anybody can go on to it, it's what became Section 53 of the Freedom of Information Act, which gave a power of veto in certain cases, it's very clear that what the Supreme Court did was to rewrite it. And I may just say that there was an earlier decision by the Administrative Court, which was presided over by the Lord Chief Justice of England and Wales,
All right.
Our most supreme, our most senior judge, who said, oh, of course, Parliament decided this. Now, the good news is that Parliament, on an all-party basis, just before the last election in 2010, something I led, agreed to give the sovereign and the next in line to the throne and the next but one complete and absolute exemption for correspondence like this, because
right, so no great harm done, in other words.
Well, there's a bit of harm, and there's a separate issue, but a really important one, about the extent to which EU directives, the environmental information directives, also impact on this. But can I just say this?
What?
People have suggested that somehow it's wrong for the prince to have offered his views in private. I think it's absolutely essential.
Well, no. They're not saying that, are they? They're not saying he shouldn't offer views. What they're saying is, if the heir to the throne, and one day, therefore, by definition, to become monarch, wants to influence public opinion, that's one thing. If he wants to, and he makes speeches, and that's fine. If he seeks to influence government decisions by writing to ministers, we are entitled, because we have a democracy, we are entitled to know what he's saying to them. Well, that is entirely reasonable, isn't it?
No, John, because it's simplistic. And
well, in what sense is it simplistic?
Well, let me just say this, because that clashes. I mean, in principle, people ought to know what goes on in organisations and when people of great influence seek to influence those organisations. But
precisely.
let me just take the case of the BBC. For
well,
example.
I'd rather you stuck with Prince Charles.
I'll tell you why. Because the BBC, although it's right in the vanguard of seeking to extract information under the Freedom of Information Act from other government departments, has been fantastically careful and gone to court and won to protect its own decision-making processes. So I don't know whether there are people...
Well, all right, I'm not going to comment on that one way or the other.
Okay.
But stay with Prince Charles. I mean, he is in a position of enormous influence. You could even argue power. I know not directly power, but nonetheless, huge influence.
Well,
and why should we not... Just deal with this one. Why should we not know if he is saying... if he's telling ministers they should do X, Z, and whatever it is about the badger cull, or whatever it happens to be, or something much more important, the armed forces, but why should we not be entitled to know what he is saying?
Because if you are entitled to know what he's saying, then it would stop him saying anything at all to ministers, because it would...
No?
I listened very, very carefully to your long question. So if you don't mind, would you listen to my answer? I just want to explain this. Let me take a tangible example. From my constituency, where I now am, a former constituency of Blackburn. Prince Charles, in the 1980s, was hugely influential in getting business in the community going, which, for the first time for some decades, brought business and the community together in this constituency and has made a big difference to people's lives. Now, he fronted that when it became public. I don't doubt, but I don't know, that on the way there, he had gone to see or maybe corresponded with the then Conservative ministers to say, I think this is a really important issue. The local government, lefty local government, and business is drifting too far apart. We need to get them together. Now, if he'd, at an early stage of that policy idea, had had to go public on this, it then would have been led to lurid headlines that Prince Charles, you know, is either on one side of government or on loony lefty councils and so on. And the whole thing would have been stillborn as it was, because in however way he developed it was done in private. He was able to get this going, and of course, he was taking a particular position, but it was one that, in the end, people were supporting. And let me just say,
yeah, but that's not anyway. I'm afraid. I wish we could go on with this, but we are gone. Another sentence. We've got to stop it then.
Well, ministers are grown up. I mean, we get advice from all sorts of people, including, I may say, senior Today programme presenters.
God forbid.
On all sorts of issues. The heir to the throne, and who spent 40 years as heir to the throne, is going to have some views. If you want to keep a constitutional monarchy, it's important that those views are known, but they're only known in private.
Well, there we are. We could argue about it for ages, couldn't we? Jack Straw, thanks very much indeed.